Now imagine there was a rule that said that you and your family could not go into the city at night. In fact, there was a road which was the boundary of your world after dark. Other folks could cross it, but not you. It sounds like something from a novel by Franz Kafka, but this has been the experience of many Australians. Race curfews started in many parts of the country in the 19th century, and they're often associated with the name Boundary Road. These boundaries are revisited and tested in a new dance work called The Line, which is set in Perth in the 1930s. It's presented by the Perth Dance Company Co. 3, and the creators are the company's artistic director, Raywin Hill. Hi, Raywin. Welcome to the show.
Hello, how are you?
Very well. And also Mark Howard. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Michael. How are you going?
Good. Now, Mark, you're originally from Busselton in WA. You've had a stellar career as a lighting designer and a director. You ran the you were the artistic director of the Ochre Contemporary Dance Company there in Perth until recently. You've done lots of projects with Co. 3. What are the origins of this one? How did this come about?
Well, it actually came about a conversation between Raywin and I talking about, you know, what sort of works we might want to make together. And at the time, we're sort of sitting right in the State Theatre Centre, which is in the heart of the boundary area. And I said, you know, 50 years ago, wouldn't even been allowed to be in this area. You would need a native pass to come into this area at all. So, and that was the beginning of us discussing the topic matter even further, and until eventually manifested itself into, you know, a work.
So that area, that boundary, just for the, I mean, there'll be a lot of people who know Perth, Perth residents and people who visited there. You're in the State Theatre Centre discussing this, were you? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, so that's in the Arts Precinct, which is in Northbridge. So it went from the foreshore to just to Newcastle Street, which is behind that, roughly in a big block of that area up to Spring Street. And it wasn't just there, it was also in Kalgoorlie and in Bassendean and in Fremantle. Like, each sort of CBD area had a restricted zone that you needed a native pass to come into.
Raywin, why was the policy introduced?
It came out of the Aboriginal Act of 1905. And so it was first created in 1927. And why?
Well, I mean, actually, because there was before at the end of the First World War, there was White City was created, which was this entertainment area on the foreshore, and it was sort of a place where there was intercultural mixing. There was boxing matches and feats of skill and vaudeville and everything. And A.O. Neville, who was the chief protector of Aborigines at the time, and sort of church pressure, decided that it wasn't right that there was this mixing going on and this frivolity down on the foreshore, and there was a big pressure then to start controlling that.
And address the half-caste issue.
Yeah, and to address the half-caste issue. So really Neville then introduced the prohibited area and the native pass, which started in 1927.
I was looking at A.O. Neville, who's a notorious figure in the history of Western Australia. He's called A.O. Everyone knows him as A.O., but his names were Orba Octavius. I think that explains a lot about A.O. Neville.
Wow.
The guy had been lumbered with his appalling name, Orba Octavius. Now, look, I'm going to read you an article that I found in the Western Mail, which was a Perth newspaper. This is from July 1934, which is basically written by someone in A.O. Neville's office. And I'm sorry for you to have to hear this, Mark, because it's pretty offensive. But this is what it says. The town, he's talking about all towns, the town is not a natural or a particularly healthy place for blacks in their present state of development. The fact remains that there are 200 or 300 full-bloods more or less permanently attached to towns in the north, because he's talking about towns right across WA, attached to towns in the north by some link or other. And moreover, the glamour of the bright lights, dimly though they may seem to flicker for Western eyes, yearly makes a stronger appeal to the savage. Isn't that an astonishing first paragraph for an article that goes on and on and on and summarises the arrangements, the curfew arrangements in various towns around the top end? I'll put a link to that article on our website. I just found it absolutely gobsmacking.
Well, I think the whole the whole notion of it is gobsmacking that you can't go somewhere without. There was only very few exceptions to the actual pass. So to actually get a pass was really quite difficult. So it just limited any chance of getting further employment of, you know. And really, at times there were some great intercultural relationships going on, and they always got squashed by, you know, initiatives like this throughout you know, the last century. Like, really, it was like, okay, there are pockets of people getting on really well. I know, we'll just implement this new thing and then it would all change again, and the narrative kept changing. It's almost like the state determining what the narrative was into the future.
Ray, when I didn't know about White City, I'm sorry it's not there anymore. I mean, it had swings. You could go for a swing. There were games of chance and boxing and log chopping. Love a good log chop. There were bands, music, dancing, gambling.
Mm. I think it was actually called Ugly Land.
Yeah, it was called Ugly Land because the Ugly Men's Association, who are a fundraising foundation for charities.
Oh.
Yeah.
So it also was says, Ugly Land. But there was white cities all around the world at the time.
Oh, it was a common term.
Yeah, it was a common term. So they started in Europe and it was sort of like an entertainment area, and it was adopted in Perth as well.
But they're a bit seedy, weren't they? I mean, it also says here there were dens of iniquity.
Yeah, but I think it depends whose den of iniquity you're looking at. It's like, I'm sure for some people it was a fantastic place to mix and, you know. I mean, I think all the negative narrative that comes out of that actually comes from the churches and for people that wanted to control people. I mean, it was just feats of strength and dancing and entertainment and music and, you know, now we've got whole areas and districts that are devoted to that.
Yeah. So the two of you made this dance piece. What are we looking at? What happens on stage?
Well, one of the things that we did talk about a lot at the beginning was how we're going to talk about the hard questions in a way that, you know, it's not really going to switch the audience off or feel like they're being preached to. And because the period is the early 20s through to the 50s, the beginning of that is silent movie and slapstick and vaudeville. So we do approach a whole lot of sections where we want to ask the hard questions about intercultural relationships, about whether you have the pass or not, in this slapstick, vaudevillian comic way. And then beyond that is the actual movement that is much more on the subconscious level and on a subtext level rather than the literal narrative. So we sort of jump between these vaudeville acts that give us all the information and then an expression of the abstract part of that in movement.
Yeah, and it's been quite an extraordinary meeting of makers in terms of what Mark brings in terms of narrative and direction and story and character. And then in terms of my movement vocabulary is very intense and it's relentless and it's so I guess when you get those two, when we've mixed those two together, in some ways the story has allowed a release from the movement, but actually when you're inside that story, you realise that you're inside this intense, sort of quite traumatic, dark place as well. But
so you
it's
are
been a different way.
Sorry, you are telling a story, are you? There are characters, and what happens in this story?
Yeah,
well, yeah, there's three stories. It's a journey of, if you like, a journey of
a
Wadjuk man. Yeah, it's a Wadjuk man who falls for a Wadjula woman, and then in a way how what they have to go through to even just have a relationship together with all the conditions that the state's putting on
right.
top of them.
So that's one story.
And that's the through line
that's
story,
through
if you
line
like.
Line
but
story.
then all the subtext stories are what happens when you ask for a pass, who controls these passes,
segregation, you know, separation,
yeah,
division,
yeah, exactly.
restriction,
and just culturally, what it does to someone to be denied walking rights.
And how do you get detail across in dance? Because usually dancers don't talk. Are your dancers allowed to talk, or do we get the message?
Oh yeah, the dancers they're allowed to talk.
Allowed
in this
talk.
When they do the vaudeville stuff, they're allowed to talk. So the vaudevilles really do set up. They're like little vignettes that set up the whole journey of their story. And then we've got the freedom to actually move the dance beyond that. That says it on in the same way that music will on a subconscious level give you information and a narrative. Then in the same way the actual movement of the dance movement, the contemporary mm-hmm. dance movement, does this, another thing where it allows you to make your own reading within it all, that you're not forced into one view of it.
Yeah, and also aesthetically, as a creator of movement, part of my language is really exploring the face as also something that moves, because often, you know, you get quite sort of emotive dance, but actually the face remains neutral. And over the years, I've been doing some study in Japan, in Butoh, and so I suppose that's really come to life in this work, where actually the face is full of character, and we sort of talk about this sort of facial violence. So the dancers are talking still and very much in character, but often with a muted voice.
In your artistic philosophy, you've got an artistic philosophy on your website, which is a fine thing to have. You see dance, you say, as a process of embodied education. That's a very scary sort of dancerly concept. What does it mean, a process of embodied education?
Well, I guess it's a process of learning and discovery and development, and I suppose that's one of the things that I'm known for with my dancers, is that, you know, we invest a lot in each other. There's an enormous amount of trust. But I am very sure that when the dancer stands in front of me, my job, if you like, to call it a job, is to find a way to enable them to go a little deeper, to maybe discover something in themselves, technically, emotionally, physically, that they perhaps can't ever have imagined that they could embody. So, yeah, I guess I approach my making like that, where, you know, the dancer stands in front or beside me on the floor, but that's not necessarily enough. And so the dancers which come into the company have a commitment to a sort of further education of self philosophy, being really. So I suppose that's what it means.
Just briefly, we haven't talked about the music. Just tell us what the music is that you're working with.
Yeah, so I've worked with Eden Mulholland a lot, and he's played live for our works before. James Crabb is a classical accordionist, and I worked with him up at Dance North and Queensland Opera with Linda Hume. We made a work about maybe 8 years ago. So there was always a desire to work with James again, and actually we discovered that around that time in 20s, 30s, 40s, the accordion was an instrument which was used a lot.
And he's a big man with a big accordion.
And he's a big man with a big accordion.
Wow.
So, it actually sort of really fitted the moment, that actually just acknowledging that the accordion was a really big sound and a big part of the environment here in that time.
Yeah.
Beautifully met.
And a big joyful sound too. We've got to stop.
It is big. Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for coming in. It's been a joy to talk to you both.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Raywin Hill and Mark Howard. They're the creators of The Line, and you can see it at the Heath Ledger Theatre in Perth from the 15th to the 19th of May. It's presented by Co3. And if you're in Brisbane, there are plans for a boundary-to-boundary walk later in the year commemorating these curfews. I gather the date hasn't been fixed yet, so do look out for that one.